The use of entheogenics or substances used for shifting consciousness is an age-old practice, one that today's guest, Dr. Martin Ball, was driven to take part in. His change of heart from staunch atheist to full-on believer in God is the basis of our third conversation with him today and of his book, Being Human, which is a very clear map that can be appreciated by seekers on all paths. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries.
The brilliant flash of mystical awakening, which I think is important, but it's not about being in that state. It's actually about learning how to trust your energy and trust who you are so that, you know, everything in ordinary life and, you know, your ordinary activities can be authentic in the self. And within that, it's not some transition to some exalted spiritual state. It's actually a state of energy. So that's why I like to talk about full energetic opening, becoming your own authority with your own energy, to increasing your perception of how energy is moving through you, which you can feel in your body, you can feel it shape your thoughts, your emotions. All of these are forms of energy. And when someone is clear and centered in their energy, then, you know, they're not troubled by so many things that egos are normally troubled by.
Exactly.
There's this release from fear so that you can be authentic. And what I describe this as is simply being yourself. That is what I describe as this is the ultimate goal of existence, is simply be yourself.
Right. And I liked...
Go ahead.
I liked reading when you were talking about this and being human, that being an individual expression of God in a body is your gift. And it just, I love, obviously, why we're doing this interview, because I believe you are able to write about a lot of this very clearly. And it just really did stop me in my tracks. It's like being an expression of God in a body is our gift. And it brings up, for me, it brought up such a strong sensation of appreciation, which is a good starting point, I think. For me, it was anyway.
Yeah. And so this is part of this reorientation that I'm trying to introduce to people. Because when you look, for example, when you look at religious traditions, many of them say, yeah, God is one, everything is God, you are an expression of God. So that there's a fundamental truth within that. Or even if they don't use the word God, you know, you are the divine, you know, source of energy of the universe, or whoever, you're the Buddha mind, however they want to describe that. But every religious tradition also then says that, look, and what we have to do is we have to get out of this cycle of reincarnation, or we have to liberate ourselves from our ignorance. We have to move on to the next highest stage of evolution. We have to go to the next realm. We have to be saved. We have to do all of these things. We have to purify ourselves. So they come up, they have the basic intuition that everything is one. But then they move on to saying, well, now as a human being, you must do all of these things in order to reach the next level or to get to the next stage or to purify your soul. And what I'm saying is, look, as a human being, you are God in a body. Now, this also has some radical consequences, because that means, you know, ideas of souls or spirits or reincarnation are totally irrelevant. You are God in a body right now. Now, there is nothing separating you from God. You are God. So you don't have a soul that needs to be saved. You are God in a body. So the reorientation then is not how do I save myself? How do I liberate myself? How do I reach the next stage to please God or to fulfill the divine purpose of the universe? The question then becomes, well, if I'm God and if I'm in a body right here and now, how do I be myself authentically? How do I live a life as this one being in a body? So it's a complete reorientation to what the goal of existence is. So rather than trying to get out and get to the next level, which is pretty much what all the religions say, I'm saying, no, it's about being right here, right now, that this actually is the purpose of existence, is for us to be here in these bodies experiencing this right here, right now. This actually is what we want as God. We want to be here. So it's not about trying to get out. It's really the process for God has been how to get in, how to get into the physical system of reality in a sophisticated enough vehicle that can actually comprehend its true nature. Well, that's us. That's what it means to be a human being.
Yes, and it's about, as you put in your book, wake up, and what we experience as normal reality is God's altered state. I like that.
Yeah, I do. I like to put it that way because, you know, for a human being, what is the most altered state? The most altered state is a sense of absolute unity with all things. So for us, that's like the extreme. But from the God perspective, the unitive perspective, that's just ordinary reality. You know, so from the God perspective, yeah, everything's one. So what? You know, it's actually kind of boring. The more time you spend in that state, the more boring it becomes. Why? Because it's all one. There's nothing happening there. So in order for God to solve this problem of being the only thing in existence, which is kind of boring, God creates reality with multiplicity. And then in terms of a game, because reality really is a game, because God knows that God is everything and there isn't anything separate and there really aren't any individual beings that exist out here, it's more fun of a game if the individual beings that are running around don't actually realize that they're the one being. So then everybody operates as though they're separate, and then things are much more exciting. You know, it's like in a movie, you want to see lots of different characters doing lots of different things, and things are exciting. We like drama, we like comedy, we like romance. Well, that only works if everybody thinks they're separate. If everybody thinks they're one, well, then they just sit around and they don't do anything. So it's a way of injecting this necessity for life and for things to happen, to have kind of this illusion. So in that sense, everybody running around is their God's altered state. They're all individuals thinking, oh, I'm just a human being and I don't know where I came from and I don't know where I'm going. So in other words, they're people who have forgotten who and what they actually are.
Right, but so, I also think that's the essence of ego, isn't it? Because if we're genuinely connected and not being sidetracked by ego, it's not a boring experience at all.
No, it's not. But we're still operating on the level of we are participating with multiple versions of ourself. And so then that becomes, that's a new level of interaction with people. So I guess I want to distinguish with the ultimate mystical experience. Really, all perception of the outside world pretty much dissolves away. And you can't really interact with other people within that fully immersed state.
Right.
Because it is so, you know, we could call it transcendental. I mean, to the point where when people are really fully mystically absorbed, I mean, their eyes can be wide open, but they don't actually see anything that's in the room. So at that level of openness and connection, most people can't really function. So there's not much they can do there.
Right.
But it is possible to interact with people at a more energetically open and authentic level in normal everyday interactions with people. But it's not necessarily that full mystical energetic opening, which is a very rarefied state. But I do think it's possible to maintain that level of clarity in every moment of the day, without doubt, without question. And it does fundamentally transform human relationships.
Right.
Absolutely. And if more, this is why I'm doing the work that I'm doing. If more people can experience this and appreciate this, we will absolutely live in a fundamentally different world.
Yes.
Because this level of operation is so much more harmonious than the level of ego confusion and fantasy we're living in now, that this would fundamentally transform human society without doubt, without question, for the better.
Yes, you're right. Keep in mind, the more you relaxed you are with your ego, the more of a challenge you become to others.
Yes.
And it's true. I mean, people, things, ways of being start falling away, don't they?
Yes, and people who are really wrapped up in their ego illusions and projections, they don't like that, you see, because it's like people behind all of the illusions and the projections, usually there is fear of some kind, and so that the illusions and the projections are there to cover over this fear. Now, people do not want their protective bubbles burst. egos don't want that. Now, see, it's actually an irony to talk about this, because the people themselves, I will argue, yes, absolutely, everyone wants their bubble burst. Everyone wants their illusions to be punctured. But their ego, which is not actually the person, the ego doesn't want that, because the ego is very invested in illusions and projections. And people, the egos don't like it when that is pointed up. People get defensive, they get angry, they get fearful. It can be very difficult for them. And also, sometimes egos don't know how to operate. Now, so for me,
I think egos know how to operate too well.
For me, at this point, you know, going back to where a year ago, really, I went through this complete energetic opening, which has remained open, where I describe myself as kind of tripping 5-MeO-DMT pretty much all the time. I've reached a point where, see, my ego is always present. I know it's there. But the thing is that it doesn't have a hold on me. So I'm actually operating from a different level of experience. So now, in my daily interactions with people, my authentic energy has absolutely zero desire to placate people in their ego fantasies and their ego projections. So this can be very, very challenging for people, that basically I won't join in with them in their games that they're creating. And so for some people, they literally don't want to be around me because I scare them too much. Because it's like I can see through their egos and I can keep pointing that out to them. And it's very disturbing for some people.
Sure.
They don't want that to happen. But for people who are ready for that, those are the people who are coming to me so that I can help them do the authentic work of transcending their ego. But it does take a willingness and trust to go in and kind of face your fears, because that's what ego is covering over, is our fears. And when people can do that, it's wonderful. And actually, energetically, I feel it in my body. When people let go of their attachments, I can actually feel it. I feel it as physical relief in my body. And sometimes it even makes me purge when people come and do work with me, that I will physically barf and vomit when they let go of their illusions, because they're holding on energetically so tight that just, it produces that reaction in me. So it's really quite curious all the ways that the interactions take place. But once you start to operate from a more authentic place and a less egoic place, yes, you can become a very huge challenge to other people, especially ones who are really holding on to their egos. Because they don't want to hear the truth. Egos don't want to hear the truth.
Right. I like also when you actually address that the energy, as you call it, of the vehicle, which you consider the body, when you address the energy of the ego, just to roll it all into one thing, it is far more effective than going on a retreat or doing a workshop, joining a religion and seeing a therapist, because those are all kind of sidesteps to get back to yourself. And why not just get back to yourself?
Yes. And that's really the perspective that I'm coming from, is that this is the most immediate path to self-awareness. And that because I'm using entheogenic neurotransmitters that work very, very quickly and are very, very powerful, that this as a methodology, it's just immediate. Now, it doesn't mean that you can change somebody overnight. I'm not saying that, because it's all based on choice. I mean, people have to continue to choose. It's not like you can't just flip a switch and somebody's fixed, for example.
But didn't you kind of flip a switch doing the 5-MeO?
What's that?
Didn't you kind of flip a switch doing the 5-MeO?
I did, but it also took repeatedly going back into that experience and continuing to choose and continuing to work through it. See, something that happens with people who work with entheogens is that they might isolate that experience, and then they might become attached to it. I need to take the medicine. I need to go back to that experience. But it's about learning how this experience, ultimately, it's just a reflection of you. There isn't anything within the 5-MeO-DMT experience that is not you. so you can experience that all the time if you want, if you choose to trust that and be in that level of energetic awareness.
Right. But Martin, since I have, you know, I've spoken with you and I've spoken to James O'Rourke, and other than that, I have no experience with people or experience myself in the realm of 5-MeO. If you were to honestly, from what you know of people that have done it, does it become the kind of experience that people become addicted to or really feel like they need to keep doing this? Or is it, you know, it sounds like you've reached a stepping off place where maybe you don't feel the need to, or maybe you do. I don't know, but that's my question.
Yeah. It's really, really individual. You know, it depends on the person themselves and what they feel prepared to accept. I mean, something that I've noticed in working with entheogens and working with medicines is that absolutely people can get stuck. They can reach a certain level of, you know, their process, but then they reach their own energetic blocks and blind spots or places where they just don't want to go beyond because it's starting to reach into the realms that are uncomfortable, or they feel that they're going to go insane or whatever it is. So a lot of people have their limits, and people can get somewhat attached to the experiences of the medicine. But the program, well, I don't know if program is really the right word, but the process that I'm really promoting here is not about needing to have that experience again and again and again, that I do look at it as a tool, that these are tools and practice experiences. So why take entheogens? What's the point? My description of the point of taking it is that it's a practice where your perception, your ability to perceive and experience energy is incredibly heightened. And within that, you can practice transcending your ego and experiencing what that energy is like. So it's a tool to help people learn the differences there. And actually, once you learn those differences, you don't necessarily need to keep going back to the medicine. What you need to do is keep choosing authentic energy, but it takes some radical experiences to learn what is the difference between ego-based energy and authentic-based energy.
Right.
That's a very tricky distinction for people to be able to make, and that's what the medicines are serving. Now, within that, 5-MeO-DMT is such a radical medicine that, yes, just one experience can pretty much permanently shift a person's perspective. But see, shifting to perspective does not necessarily mean that it's shifting how someone is choosing to make their choices and live their life. It can change your perspective, but if it doesn't come with changed behaviors, then it's not really making a shift. It's not really making an effective shift.
Understood.
And the difficulty is that people don't always understand where they are making choices or how they are doing that. They don't see how they're building illusions
right.
for themselves or how they're building energetic limitations. And so working with the medicines over a period of time can definitely help with that, as long as you're continuing to choose to accept your full authentic energy. But people can get stuck in things like getting, you know, desiring to go to speak with the machine elves or go into the astral realms and communicate with spirit beings and things like that, which I describe all of this as these are just projections from the self. So it's about learning to integrate all of that and take responsibility for it, not get attached to kind of the unique otherworldliness of the entheogenic experience. It's about being present right here, right now, in whatever room you're in or wherever you are. It's not about getting into some other realm or dealing with entities or things like that. These are all experiences of the self.
I loved what you wrote about children and responsibility. What stands out for you from where you sit?
Yeah, well, in looking at children, really I was kind of asking myself the question of, well, where do all these problems of the ego come from? And, you know, do we see them exhibited within children or not? And so then where is this developing and how? And, you know, when we look at the way that parents raise children, parents have certain ideas of their responsibility towards their children. And generally that involves training children in one way or another to be good people. Now, every culture, every religion, every tradition has a different definition of what it means to be a good person. And within that, parents, cultures, traditions are basically imposing ego-generated limits on children. Now, if we look at children's natural behavior, children really just want to play all the time. That's just a natural child-based activity, is they want to play. So for them, everything is pretty much a game. But what children start to observe among adults is that because adults are so wrapped up in ego projections and stories and games and things like that, what children are able to energetically experience is that most adults are inauthentic, that adults will say things that they don't mean, that they put limits on themselves, and that they're basically playing these games where they're not being authentic with each other and not being authentic with children. So children start to develop this sense of an ego as a persona that allows them to participate in these social games that people play. But they're not learning that in a healthy way, that they're not learning how to authentically be themselves. They're learning how to be a character within these cultural dramas and family dramas that are being scripted for them. So basically, we're not helping our children learn how to be authentic within themselves. Really, what we're doing when we're raising children is we are programming them into certain cultural or traditional modes of operation that are not teaching children how to get in touch with what they authentically feel. So we're constantly telling children, don't do that, don't do this, be a good boy, be a good girl. And we're programming them in doing that. Rather than respecting what their natural energy wants to do, we right. are creating them into models of what we think good human beings are. And unfortunately, pretty much every model that we have of what a good human being is wrapped up in high levels of story projection and illusion. What I argue in my book is that the number one responsibility that parents have towards their children is helping their children authentically be themselves and express themselves so that they can be comfortable with who and what they are. Now, in order for that to happen, parents themselves need to be clear and comfortable with themselves and with their own energy. Parents who are wrapped in illusion are not going to be able to raise children who are free from illusion. So parents, if they really want to do the best for their children, the first thing they need to do is get clear with themselves and then practice clarity and authenticity with their children. But you can't just go to the children and say, I'm going to help you be authentic, if the parents themselves don't know how to be authentic. Often these days, what we're doing is we're really focusing on the children and we're trying to see, well, how can we make things better for the children? And we're not really looking at, well, what's happening with their parents, what's right. happening with their culture,
sure.
where we're treating symptoms, but we're not really treating what's causing this in the first place.
Right. And it does go out beyond the mother and father, certainly. So that's a good point. In closing, Martin, what would you like to say about divine imagination?
Oh, that's such a big topic. Well, let me put it this way. This is one of the great things about working with entheogens is it helps you perceive what I like to describe as the divine imagination, which is this visionary state of consciousness that we can all participate in. And something that's very startling about taking entheogens is that often people find themselves in visionary states of consciousness that seem well beyond anything that they ever could have possibly imagined. And therefore, many people take the position that they're actually going somewhere, or that they've gone to another realm, they've gone to another level, or they're having contact with aliens or spirits or whatever, because these are very realistic environments. But what I like to do is describe this as, this is your personal interface, that you have to understand that within this paradoxical reality that we live in, we are both the perceiver and we are that which is perceived. And we're actually operating at two different levels of self. So we have this egoic, personal identity of self, and then there actually is the more encompassing, unitive sense of self, which is God consciousness. Now, within the experience of taking entheogens, especially when you close your eyes and you're in this visionary space, you are, again, you are that which is perceiving and also that which is being perceived. But people don't really understand how it is that they are producing that which they are perceiving. So it's this interactive interface that has these feedback loops between how you're choosing to react to what you are experiencing and what you are actually producing within that experience. So one way that I like to describe this is that it's an interactive mirror. And within this interactive mirror, if you are not clear about your own identity, you will see many different things within this mirror. And especially if your ego gets involved, it can produce all kinds of story and imaginative things going on within this mirror. But the truth is, when you reach a point of clarity within yourself, when you take psychedelics, you don't see that stuff anymore, actually. You just might see energy, or maybe even nothing at all, because when you reach a point of clarity, there really isn't anything to reflect within the mirror other than the infinite nature of your own personal energy, because everything within the entheogenic experience is an experience of the self. So my point being that you can actually move beyond any kind of experience of a visionary realm or beings or entities within that. Because anytime you're seeing a being or entity within the entheogenic experience, it's yourself in one form or another, and you're just failing to recognize that it's actually you that is that being that's coming to you. And within that, if you are not within your energetic center, that these truly can feel like other beings, other intelligences, other entities that are interacting with you. But my guarantee to everyone is that they're not. They are absolutely not other entities. They are you, even if you can't immediately recognize it as such. So the process that I work through with people is how to learn to recognize that as yourself and integrate it and move beyond it and make it a part of yourself rather than something other or something external to right. you. Within the divine imagination, you will present yourself with all kinds of lessons and opportunities to recognize yourself. But it's, again, it's an individual choice of trust and surrender and acceptance. And so you can always choose that. You can always choose to experience things as exterior to yourself, or you can choose to experience it as a part of yourself. And so that's what I'm encouraging people to do, is to reach that point. Hopefully, people will learn not to get caught up in their visions and in their stories. The purpose of divine imagination experiences is not to tell yourself a story. It's to move beyond it. You got to understand that as long as you're not clear and you're participating in reality, either, you know, in the divine imagination or with other people, you got to understand that everything that exists is a mirror. There is nothing that is not you. So no matter what you're experiencing, it's a mirror of you in some way or another. Now, if you are not clear with who and what you are, that means you're kind of in a funhouse of distorted mirrors. Undistort that mirror. Get it so that you can see yourself clearly in the mirror. But within that is also a recognition that, look, all of reality is ultimately a game. So I do encourage people to look at it in kind of this lighthearted way so that we don't get too wrapped up on our dramas of what we think is going on. Authentic interactions with people where not only you, but the other people can see and feel and understand that without a doubt, we are one being. There is no separation, that all separation is just an illusion. It is liberating for people that, my God, it's true, we're all one. And then people can relax. I mean, that's the greatest gift. We're here. This is it. And we are doing exactly what we want to do, is play the reality game. So let's stop worrying. All we need to do is just love each other. There's no need to fear or hate anyone or to compete with them or to feel that they are somehow threatening to you. When we can all reach a point of authenticity, we do not need to fear anything, because it's all us.
It's been great fun speaking with Dr. Martin Ball, author of Being Human, these last few weeks. I never did get to ask him, though, if he thought the Sonoran Desert Toad had anything to do with the fairy tales and kissing that frog and finding the prince. We'll leave that for another day. For archives and any other show information, we can be reached at tributariesradio.wordpress.com, and our podcasts are on iTunes and wherever you'd like to find them. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.